In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, September 1st, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's industry chatter time, and my guest on that series today is Isabel Reif. She is the Executive Vice President of ICF International, and it's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me, we always start off with kind of the thumbnail sketch of what your company does and how they serve federal customers. Tell me what you do.
Okay. ICF is a professional services firm. We work across the entire federal government. Our work is largely concentrated in two areas, energy, environment, and transportation, and health, education, and social programs. In those two areas, we work across the entire program lifecycle. We bring considerable subject matter expertise, policy support, research and evaluation, and we also help with the implementation of those programs through information technology, communications, et cetera. A little known fact about ICF is that when we were founded 40 years ago, ICF stood for the Inner City Fund, and our mission statement is to improve the quality of life. And then, as now, our staff and as a firm, we are sort of compelled by the pressing issues of the day, and clearly there are many of them mm-hmm. today, as there always have been. Mm-hmm. And we support our clients, and many of us have been working on these issues for our entire careers.
That structure sounds a little bit different than most government contracting companies, because most companies provide, when they talk about providing services, it's a more defined service. And it sounds like a lot of, at least part of the portfolio of your company, revolves around conceptualization when you're talking about policy development and that kind of thing, rather than we make widgets or we provide widgets to this agency or that agency for this or that purpose. Is that fair to say?
Yes, in a sense. We do think we are a little different from some of the other companies. We have grown up in the marketplace providing sort of deep subject matter expertise in some respects, the very earliest phases of programs. Mm-hmm. And, for example, in the energy and environmental sector, we have developed a number of analytical tools and models that we bring to the table and help in creating the analyses that form the basis of policies and programs as we move along. We mm-hmm. do that similarly in public health. We have, over time, grown and diversified as a company, and increasingly, we also work on implementing those programs. And so we do have, as do many other companies, you know, probably, you know, over 1,000 individuals who do information technology mm-hmm. and do strategic communications. But I would say in most of those cases, in almost all of those cases, those individuals also identify with one of these subject matter areas. So our IT folks think of themselves, or some of our IT folks certainly, think of themselves as health IT mm-hmm. or people who do health informatics.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that is a desirable connection for agencies to it sounds like it's kind of a one-stop shop where you're going to get somebody that's going to help you develop the concept and then also make it happen and put it into practice.
Well, we certainly hope that they see it that way.
Uh-huh.
I guess what we hope that is a discriminator is that our staff don't just look like everybody else,
mm-hmm.
that an agency is getting someone who brings a very specific kind of expertise that may be very important to their mission, but which may not exist in the agency, and though they need to have this. And or we have people who have worked on these issues, certainly in energy and environment, or sort of for their whole gestation, you know, from the 1970s when much of the legislation passed till now, and really understand what's been tried, what has worked, what hasn't worked, and the nuances involved. And so we hope that that is a value add that we can provide.
We're in an interesting time, I think, in government, especially in some of the areas in which your company operates most prevalently, and that is with the budget situation that we're in, and yet at a time when government at least says that it's demanding more innovation and more creativity from clients, There's a balance there that is hard for some agencies to strike and also for some vendors to strike. How do we be innovative and yet come in on a bid at a price that we can actually win the business? How are you finding that balance to be? Is it as difficult as it seems to look from the outside?
Well, the way I see it, being innovative doesn't necessarily mean being more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it may mean precisely the opposite. So, the way I look at it, there are a couple of things about this. Sometimes agencies really do want innovation. They are seeing it in the marketplace. They're seeing that they go home and they do all of these things with consumer technology, yet they don't see it in the programs that they're running, and they actually want that. Other times, they're not literally looking for innovation. They think their programs are working fine, but they just don't have as much money as they had.
Mm-hmm.
And in those cases, what they really need, what they're really saying to you is, we need this, but can you find a way to execute this more efficiently?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's incompatible. And I actually think that we always are striving in the marketplace to find a way to innovate and be new.
Do the agencies do a good job, do you think, of articulating that, which is when, like when they really are looking for innovation and when they really are just looking for a more cost-effective way to do what they're already doing?
Not all the time. It's not all the time clear, okay? A procurement may come out and they may be asking about innovation, and they may in their own minds know, well, of course, that's what we mean, right? But it's not entirely clear to you as a vendor that that's what they mean. And I think anyone who's listening to this program who's ever written a proposal knows that you spend hours and hours reading the tea leaves. Did they really mean this? Did they really mean that? What does this word really mean? We're getting much better, by the way, as a company in just asking because we find that clients are happy to answer. But no, not always. And I think that in the absence of being explicit about why innovation is wanted and how it will be used, it makes it difficult for us to come up with an appropriate solution, and we end up being quite conservative and just avoiding it.
Yeah, one of the items on Dan Gordon's Mythbusters list was that whole process, that collaborative process, is perfectly fine and, in fact, should happen before the procurement even comes out in the first place, so that by the time it gets to that point, the agency should be able to be a little more articulate about what's there. Are you seeing that start to happen?
That's exactly right. It's interesting you mentioned that. I've had the recent opportunity to interact with acquisition folks in different forums, one a group from GSA, and a couple of senior acquisition officials who are very good from the Department of Homeland Security and the IRS. And they both talked exactly about that and about the difficulties they face because they find that often contractors don't ask all the questions that they need, and how it really does boil down to communications, that the forums in which we are supposed to communicate and ask those questions sometimes are not optimum. And so I do think that people are – GSA procurement officials are actively encouraging people to ask questions, and I think we are getting better at asking them. And we are also talking about, there are people in GSA who talk about using wiki technology to have a better way of communicating.
One of the things that people mention from time to time, too, is I'd like to collaborate with the agency better, but I don't want to show my cards, essentially, and give... You know, I don't want to, as your competition potentially, I don't want to give you an idea of what direction I might go in when it comes to a proposal, especially on a services contract where your solution might be completely different than mine, unless I get an idea that can literally steal an idea from you.
Right. So there are a couple of things about that. One of the things about that is that agencies are looking at more opportunities where they can segment the procurement process. So it starts with a certain general level of detail and then continue to winnow it down and refine it so that everybody's testing the waters and not overinvesting too early. And sometimes those at different points include face-to-face discussions where you can be a little bit more open and have more give and take. And there are a number of other other ways that they're talking about trying to do that. But I think the drive to have more specificity so that we could turn our attention to fine-tuning a solution rather than guessing what's wanted is driving us to be a little bit more open in our questions.
When we come back from the break, I'd like to talk about what, if you could wave a magic wand, what that collaborative effort would look like with the agencies. We'll do that when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Isabel Reif is my guest. She's the Executive Vice President at ICF International on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Jane Norris for Fed Central on Wednesday, September 7th and 21st at 11:30 a.m. General Charles Wald and Casey Healy of the Deloitte Federal Government Practice discuss the energy strategy of the Department of Defense and how alternative energy supplies can reduce costs, stabilize fuel access, and ultimately increase national security. Don't miss Deloitte's Fed Central program Wednesday, September 7th and 21st at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
The numbers mount, and so does the need of the more than 45,000 men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces wounded in action overseas. They are coming home, and you can help their transition by joining the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 15th, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, providing direct programs for our injured veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Charity 5K.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Army is about to make its first foray into secure computing on tablet devices. They're expecting approval for their first touchscreen tablet, a 10-inch device running the Windows 7 operating system. It also includes a built-in smart card reader, so Army users can use their common access cards to digitally sign and encrypt data on the network. Army leaders say they're working to overcome security hurdles and get some of the more popular consumer tablets, such as iPads and Android devices, up and running.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday morning's Federal Drive. We're going to try to clear up some confusion over that new Labor Department rule. It requires contractors to hire employees of an incumbent contractor. Or does it? And as part of our continuing coverage of 9/11, a government changed. We'll find out about a program that pays the college tuition for any child of any Fed killed on September 11th. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Isabel Reif of ICF International is my guest on Industry Chatter, and you've had some time now to noodle through the question that I asked you before we went to the break, and that is, we're talking about the collaborative effort that Dan Gordon's trying to encourage, Martha Johnson's trying to encourage, right, between the agencies and vendors early on in the acquisition process. What, in your ideal world, what would that collaborative process look like? How would it change from how it looks today?
Okay. Well, aspects of it are happening all over. The issue is its prevalence. It's certainly not happening every mm-hmm. place. I think that there are a variety of things. Some of it is collaborative, and some of it is just providing information. Some agencies do a really good job of giving you a forecast of opportunities and telling you what's out there. Okay, so that is very helpful. I'm sure you've heard from others, but most companies are reluctant to bid on projects that just materialize,
mm-hmm.
okay, for any number of reasons. And so early warning helps you both get ready and do a better job, but it really, frankly, I think it's in the government's interest because it increases the likelihood of more bidders, and that increases competition, and they want that. So information and visibility into the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
A number of agencies now, and I think this is a good idea, will issue draft statements of work and ask for comments. And again, in the forum that I referred to earlier, the contracting folks told us that unfortunately, a lot of vendors use that as an opportunity to just provide their quals,
mm-hmm.
when in really what they want are comments on that draft statement of work.
Yeah.
What works, what doesn't, and that for a good contracting officer, it's quite influential, and it helps decisions like whether the statement of work is specific enough to generate a firm fixed price contract, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that asking for those kinds of comments help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
During the procurement process, there are always questions and answers. Right now, I think in almost every case I know, we do it the old-fashioned way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a deadline by this date, send them in. We do send them by email, but send them in, and then they get responded to all at once.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of old-fashioned, and it doesn't give you an opportunity to say, oh, I see the way you answered it, but what we really meant was this and this and this,
mm-hmm.
right? It's kind of a just a one-time response rather than getting to that nuance.
And it strikes me, too, that if that process is as transparent as it should be, there
right.
then should be opportunities for you to be able to process the answers to other vendors' questions and
right.
maybe be able then to respond to those, or maybe that will generate another
right.
question on your part
right.
or something like that.
Right.
And I understand you can get into an endless cycle where you're answering questions forever if you're the agency and you actually at some point have to actually procure something
right.
and get the job done.
But the ability to go back and forth a little bit in a timely fashion, I think, again, will provide more clarity and increase the likelihood that even if they ended up having to extend the procurement, increase the likelihood that they'll be able to award and then not have to deal with a lot of questions afterwards because the proposals they got weren't precise.
It would seem to me, too, that would help a lot when it comes to protests, where if you get to a point where you're really definitive after that draft process and the draft is really boiled down to exactly what the agency needs and exactly how they need it, then at some point a vendor who doesn't get the deal is going to be able to – is going to have to say, well, I understand exactly why we didn't get it. At least to some degree it might help with that process, do you think?
That I can't comment on. The protest process there are a lot of factors that can contribute to that. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm not certain about that. But I do think it can get better proposals
mm-hmm.
and ultimately sort of shorten the period.
Yeah, it strikes me that is where most procurements that have problems later on go wrong, is in that very early process of understanding the requirements and the agency understanding what the possibilities are. You know, it used to be when an agency needed 500 widgets,
right?
Your widgets either were acceptable or not acceptable, and it was different. In the world of services contracting, that, of course, is completely out the window. And it's not fair, of course, to expect agencies to know what all the possibilities are to meet whatever requirement that they have. And so having somebody be able to evaluate that and provide a number of different potential ways to that destination seems to be pretty wise. But that's where the agency sometimes go off the rails, I think.
Right.
My guest is Isabel Reif. She is the Executive Vice President of ICF International. Our conversation continuing on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM when we continue.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Is this the year you're going to do it? Pack your bags for that trip of a lifetime?
The whole travel industry has been just exploding.
Dr. Stephen Krotzer is a travel medicine specialist at Mayo Clinic. If you're planning a trip overseas, maybe even to a remote or developing area, he says there's another trip you should take first, to your doctor's office and maybe a travel medicine specialist. You need to make sure you're fit enough to travel, and then there are the vaccinations.
The most important vaccines of all are just the routine ones.
Like diphtheria, tetanus, and the flu shot. Depending on where you're headed, insect-borne diseases like dengue fever, yellow fever, and malaria may need to be discussed. Dr. Krotzer also suggests medical evacuation insurance. It's relatively cheap, but can save you thousands if you need to be brought home because of injury or illness. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Flu vaccinations for young children are given in two doses. The first primes the immune system, and the second spurs an immune response. Currently, there are two types of flu vaccines approved as safe and effective for children, a trivalent inactivated vaccine and a live attenuated vaccine.
The inactivated is an injection, and the attenuated is a nasal spray.
NIH's Dr. Anthony Fauci says there had been a concern regarding the second dose.
Sometimes when children go back, it's difficult to match them with exactly the same one that they had.
Now new research shows doses can be mixed and matched. For details, visit www.niaid.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Not waterproof. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Even if sunscreens say they're waterproof, they're not. Sunscreens can wash off with sweat or just being in the water. When this happens, their sun protection washes off too, leaving users at greater risks for burns, premature skin aging, and possibly even skin cancer. So the Food and Drug Administration has set new rules to help people know what they're getting and when to use it. FDA dermatologist Jill Lindstrom.
Sunscreens may only use the term water resistant and must clearly indicate how long water resistance actually lasts.
You might not see the change on the labels just yet because the rule is new. It'll take effect by the summer of 2012, so there's a lot of product on the shelves that doesn't have the information. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Are you ready to explore how consolidation, cloud computing, and mobility are driving change in government? Plan now to attend GuideTech and Affirm September 15th symposium to learn how 15 agencies are reforming the way they do business. Together, they'll discuss how OMB's 25-point plan is being implemented with leaders at GAO, Veterans Affairs, the Army, DHS, the FBI, and Commerce, among others, as they deliver citizen services across a variety of devices seamlessly. Register today for this half-day symposium at affirm.org.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Isabel Reif is the Executive Vice President of ICF International, and she is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. What effect is the whole budget situation and the when I talk about budget situation, I'm not just talking about the shrinking of the budgets potentially. I'm talking also about continuing resolutions, continuing forever, seemingly all of that. What impact is that having on how the agencies have to do business with you and then how you have to work inside your company?
Okay. Well, this year, when we've had both the debate and issues around the continuing resolution and then the debt ceiling, what we have noticed with our clients is that that the uncertainty, you know, the government as the consultants then spend a lot of time speculating. What if this is going to happen? How's that going to happen? It's an enormous distraction, mm-hmm. right? When you know the facts, you can mobilize and deal with it. And most of us rise to the occasion and do what we have to do. But when you don't know them, you spend a lot of time doing nothing but thinking about what might happen. And so, or thinking, you know, gee, we better not act because we don't know really. So we saw throughout the year a certain slowdown in a number of activities. And then with this quarter and the pending close of the government fiscal year, you know, many of the procurement officials and agencies are swamped with things that have happened throughout the year. So mm-hmm. I think many of the agencies are feeling a lot of workload pain right now as they get to the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So that is a dramatic thing we're thinking. And I do think that everybody, in on a broader level, what we think about, and I think what all our clients think about, and I think what everyone who reads the newspaper or is an American thinks about, is making sure that everything they do in this sector on these issues adds value. And how do you describe why it's important to do it, who will benefit, how can you show that there's a benefit and that you're accountable and that you will guarantee that benefit. And so I do think that is an underlying theme throughout everything we're seeing in government. To a certain degree, I believe it'll be reflected in more contracts that are performance-based mm-hmm. or service-level agreements. But even where not, I think it will – It just seems so obvious that it's an important thing to do.
I noticed on your website that you're on any number of different contracts, a whole bunch of them. Are we getting to a point now where there are enough of these government-wide contracts, do you think? Because as I dig into these, I see different ones come out and so on. Some of them don't really look that dramatically different than ones that already exist. And I just wonder at some point, is enough enough? I mean, it's certainly no reflection on your company.
Right,
you
right.
want to be in as many different places as you can be to serve your customers. That makes perfect sense. But I just wonder at some point if there's – it seems to me it's an awful lot of the same kind of work for a company like yours that wants to be all these different places.
Well, it is a lot of work. And as a company, you really cannot afford to forego a contract that may be important to an agency.
Sure.
And as I said earlier, we work across the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And the kinds of work we do can be done by nearly every agency. And as a result, we the name of the game is to be reached.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's hard to answer when is enough enough.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. I mean, there are a lot. And,
You mentioned the end of the fiscal year, and that's only, 29 days from today. What does that look like for on the vendor side, you mentioned the agencies are crushed with work trying to get everything done, especially when we have a shortened window with the continuing resolution deal not being done till like the beginning of April this year. But what does it look like from the vendor side?
What it looks like from the vendor side is that a lot of procurements will be decided in that month.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of them are already submitted. There are some that continue to be submitted, and there are tasks under indefinite quantity contracts where there's a rush of proposaling in the last month. But so in the last month, you could be spending an awful lot of time responding to questions if you're lucky enough to be in the competitive range and short range. And so it looks like that from a bid and proposal side. It looks like either a lot of celebration and occasionally some sadness.
Uh-huh.
But it looks like that. It also looks like, because the reason contracts are up is that option years are exercised.
Mm-hmm.
And so frequently there is a lot of work also to be executed in the last month of the fiscal year that has to be accomplished before the end of the fiscal year. So September is a very busy month with a lot of emotion in the federal space.
And October is kind of a blow-off steam month, I guess, for you.
Well, we hope it's a startup month.
Yeah, well, okay, fair point.
We hope it's like, wow, it's like the first day of school again.
Uh-huh, that's right. The budget situation is difficult for agencies because of the uncertainty, as much as the actual dollar figures that are attached to it in many cases. Is that the case on the vendor side too?
Yes. First and foremost is the uncertainty. As for all the reasons I said before, I don't need to repeat, but first and foremost is that. Beyond that, we think the addressable market for the broad kind of services that our work falls into, if you include defense and civilian, is close to $100 billion. Okay, the civilian piece of it, which is 90% of our federal work, is $34 billion.
Mm-hmm.
We are very proud at how fast we've grown and how big we are, but we are still a very small part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the absolute reductions don't worry me so much. I do believe there's still a lot of opportunity for us to win work and grow. Obviously, something could happen to a particular program that we work on that could be threatened, but we also think there could be new programs. So the absolute change doesn't bother me as much as all the uncertainty.
We've talked a lot about the pre-procurement process and the procurement process. I want to talk a little bit about the execution part of it when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Isabel Reif is the Executive Vice President of ICF International and my guest for the hour. We'll be back in a moment.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
The Transportation Department wants to create a Digital Transportation Exchange, or DTE, to more easily connect with its customers across the country. Nitin Pradhan is Transportation's Chief Information Officer. He says DTE will help create an online marketplace for transportation technologies. The Digital Transportation Exchange will help private companies connect with DOT agencies and with other companies to work on common problems or challenges. Transportation will hold a forum on DTE September 23rd.
Desktops, tablets, smartphones, thin clients. If you're in federal IT, these are your challenges. Visit cdwg.com/configuration to learn how our experts can help you meet them all with configured, imaged, asset-tagged client computing solutions. CDWG. People who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to see how the Xerox Phaser 8560 MFP can support users with fast, reliable network printing and remote printing capabilities.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Federal News Radio's Ruben Gomez talked with OPM's Angela Bailey. She says the decision to close a building ultimately belongs to GSA.
We clearly understood that we were probably going to get a few buildings wrong in the process, but we thought it was in everyone's best interest to take a leadership role and step up and do the best that we could to help and provide the list as we knew it at that point in time.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Not waterproof. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Even if sunscreens say they're waterproof, they're not. Sunscreens can wash off with sweat or just being in the water. When this happens, their sun protection washes off too, leaving users at greater risks for burns, premature skin aging, and possibly even skin cancer. So the Food and Drug Administration has set new rules to help people know what they're getting and when to use it. FDA dermatologist Jill Lindstrom.
Sunscreens may only use the term water resistant and must clearly indicate how long water resistance actually lasts.
You might not see the change on the labels just yet because the rule is new. It'll take effect by the summer of 2012, so there's a lot of product on the shelves that doesn't have the information. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Isabel Reif. She's the Executive Vice President of ICF International. And we've talked throughout the program so far quite a bit about the procurement and acquisition side of the work that you do. Talk about the execution side, because if we look at program management, project management, not just in IT, but in other areas too, that's an area that agencies struggle with. And it's tied to what we talked about requirements and so forth quite a lot. But what are some of the stumbling blocks that you see, or what are some things that agencies are good at or getting better at when it comes to actually making projects come out the way that they looked in the beginning?
Well, you know, I hate to beat a dead horse, but it seems to be the answer to everything. It's the quality of the communication and the engagement. Okay? I do think that agencies and the technical folks in the agencies recognize the importance of maintaining active engagement with the contractor, the consultant, and working with them all the time. I think they're doing a better job, and we're doing a better job to make sure that our relationship is not just on the technical side, but it's on the contract side too.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do view our relationship with our clients as both a technical relationship, and it's obviously a contractual relationship, but that it's a relationship between our contracts person and the government contracts person. Also, that's equally important, because it's just another way to make sure that we are executing consistent with what the full breadth of expectations are.
Are the agencies getting better at keeping the end users involved in these projects as they're going on? For a long time, it seemed like the vendors dealt a lot with the acquisition shops and the project management shops, but the actual end users didn't really see anything until the end of it. Is that improving, do you think?
Yeah, in our experience, the end users are very involved and have been. Mm-hmm. So yes.
Nothing's more frustrating for the end user than to turn something on and take a look at it and go, well, why doesn't it do this?
Right.
And the vendor goes, well, nobody told me
you wanted it
to do this. And the procurement shop says, well, you never told us you wanted it to do that.
That's right. And that's right. And I can certainly imagine in certain areas that happens. But I think in the nature of the business that we're engaged with, mm-hmm. and the kind of professional services that we're providing, and particularly our involvement in the front end and on sort of the substance policy side, that has not been a problem that we have faced.
Mm-hmm.
I think it may be for others.
Yeah. The whole concept of the communication cycle, you said don't want to beat a dead horse, but that's the core of all of this stuff, I think. And so I don't think you're doing that at all. I think that's very fair. Do you see improvement at maintaining that line of communication?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, you know, you talked about the Mythbusters memo and that came out. And, you know, I think like everything else, people read that and they heard certain words and some people got it right away and some people didn't quite understand, well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. How do you operationalize that?
Yeah.
And I think over time, people are getting better at doing that. And I think that GSA and others are trying to lead by doing and show it. And I think it is. Yeah, I definitely think it is. It is getting better. And like I said, we're getting better at asking those questions. It may just be, I mean, I've been doing this at ICF for 22 years. Mm-hmm. I won't say how long I've been doing it, but I've been doing ICF for 22 years.
So you started when you were like 8?
Yeah, really. No.
Wow.
So I've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, at some point you sort of think, I'm just going to ask this. Mm-hmm. We need to know it. It's reasonable. If it's a problem to ask, someone will tell me. But let's do and see where it goes. And I do think that that is happening.
Mm-hmm. The whole communications line, you mentioned Mythbusters. We've talked about that. Does that stuff work? I mean, is it making a difference overall in how the agencies are communicating with you and how what you're able to say to them and so on? Or is it just, are they going, well, this is something that somebody's telling us and eventually somebody else will be doing that job and he may or may not make us do the same thing. So we'll just keep doing what we're doing.
I think that, you know, it's uneven, but I think it is growing. I think that the better folks are doing it, I hope that because they are the better folks, they are people who will rise to leadership positions within their organizations, and it will therefore spread more broadly throughout their organizations. I think it is. I think people who do it find value in it, and I think over time that will be reflected. But I think you are talking about change in how business is conducted, and it doesn't just happen on a dime. You know, so there was a lot of talk of, okay, but we held these forums and all these firms came and no one asked a question. So, you know, at first you did hear about that. And then folks said, yeah, well, let's think about that. So then what can we do different and how can we keep going? So I think you're talking about a change, but I definitely think it will happen.
It's a cultural thing.
Yes.
And just like any culture, that it is difficult to change. What have been, you said some agencies are doing it, some agencies get it and are doing better than others. The ones that are doing it well, what are they doing, do you think, that makes it easier for you to serve them better?
Well, I think that, some of it are some of the things that I mentioned earlier. They are issuing draft statements and asking for comments. They are holding meetings with contractors and with vendors one-on-one and sort of thinking through how they might approach things. They are answering questions in a process in a very timely fashion, so there's a chance to answer follow-up questions. They are segmenting the bid process so that it goes through a series of down selects so that you can fine-tune things and make more commitments over time. Some of the reluctance to talk doesn't come from a bad place. It comes from an appropriate concern about the competitive process and what are you allowed to say and what are you not allowed to say and how do you get comfortable with how you share information. Mm-hmm. And I think that people in their interest in being honest and honorable and do the right thing can sometimes naturally revert to a cautious place. Mm-hmm. And so to a certain degree, it has to do with getting comfortable with what it's okay to talk about. And again, some of that is a function of leadership. Organizations who say, this is okay and we need you to talk about this.
We're already starting to run out of time. So when we come back for the last segment, I'd like to ask you about where you see the market broadly heading, where you see the market heading in the areas that your company specializes in, and how you think the landscape might look maybe a year or 2 years out. And I know it's hard to predict with all the uncertainty that we've talked about, but just some of your thoughts along those lines when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Isabel Reif is my guest. She's the Executive Vice President of ICF International.
It takes on targets with unmatched accuracy, from armor and air defense units to maritime patrol craft, artillery, radar sites, bunkers, enemy command centers. It is JAGM, the Joint Air-to-Ground Missile designed by Lockheed Martin, meeting all Army, Navy, and Marine Corps requirements for employing precision-guided weapons from rotary wing, fixed wing, and unmanned aerial systems, with margins that reduce risk and get JAGM to the warfighters on time, enhancing capabilities while expanding mission flexibility, effectiveness, and survivability, saving dollars and saving lives. Lockheed Martin's JAGM builds on decades of experience and over 10 years of the most rigorous testing, rolling off the same production lines as the combat-proven Hellfire. JAGM from Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Ravens fans, 1500 AM Federal News Radio is your D.C. home for Ravens football. Listen to every game as the Ravens dominate the AFC North and march toward the Super Bowl.
It's intercepted! Ray Lewis with the pick! Touchdown, Ravens! The Ravens delivers the miracle!
Catch the action as the Ravens take on the Pittsburgh Steelers in the season opener Sunday, September 11th. Pregame starts at 12:30 p.m. on 1050 AM.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
By the latest second-generation Intel Core processors, new HP ProLiant GS servers are an ideal choice for reducing power costs and getting a jump on your cloud computing initiatives. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how the power of HP and Intel can achieve ROI in as little as 2 months. Talk to GovConnection and find out how together they can power your data center into the future. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
A baby, your weight, and diabetes. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. If you plan to get pregnant, your weight can affect your risk of getting gestational diabetes, a form of diabetes that is diagnosed during pregnancy. Researchers saw this in data from 22,000 women who had their first or second pregnancy from 1996 to 2006. Samantha Ehrlich is at the Kaiser Permanente Division of Research in Oakland, California.
Women who gained body mass in between pregnancies increased their risk of developing gestational diabetes in the second pregnancy. Women who lost body mass in between pregnancies decrease their risk.
She recommends
lose weight prior to becoming pregnant, particularly those women who have had gestational diabetes in a previous pregnancy.
The study in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter with Isabel Reeve, the Executive Vice President of ICF International. Where do you see the landscape of contracting in general, of the areas in which your company specializes or the agencies or whatever, where do you see it looking different in the next year to 2 years than it looks today, Isabel?
Okay, well, in terms of the areas that we work, where we expect to see a lot of interest on the part of the government is, for example, in the work we do supporting military personnel who have been deployed, specifically around health care and mental health issues. We see a real increase in interest in the use of modeling and simulation to both serve those individuals and also to train people who are going to work with them for any number of reasons that have to do with lowering cost, being more flexible, and also speaking to a younger generation who has grown up using those tools.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that in that area. In the energy and environment and transportation area, what we see is a real need to identify win-win solutions. There is no doubt that we have to deal with energy. We have to deal with conventional energy sources. We have to deal with new and renewable energy sources, right? Nothing is essentially off the table, and we have to talk about energy efficiency. And we have to do that in a context where we are mindful of the environmental laws and regulations and issues that exist. And so what we expect to see is looking at how we can continue to pursue all of those energy sources in the proper combination for the right situation while we meet these environmental goals and don't delay everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard, but it that's what we have to do. In the health, education, and social programs area, where you see a lot of focus on early childhood education, you see improving outcomes for public school students and charter school students, and you see a number of public health initiatives around obesity and smoking. There, the name of the game, I think, is being able to do the proper or enough research and evaluation to have some confidence in the interventions to say, okay, here's a place where it's appropriate to do X or Y, and we have some belief and knowledge that it is the better solution because there's some evidence and behind it. And so I think that's where we expect to see much interest.
I appreciate you being here for this hour. It's been a terrific conversation. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Isabel Reif is the Executive Vice President of ICF International, my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.